It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Okay, absolutely insane couple of days. And I've been sitting here trying to figure out who is it that's going to go back on their contract, right? And be like, nah, I'm signing somewhere else. Because it happened.
Well, the J.D. McKissick.
Exactly. It's
Will Lutz did that. I know that's the top of everybody's fantasy mind, yeah. Is Will Lutz.
Yeah. Let's start with kicker talk here. He did. He went, no, I'm good. I'm outies. And he signed elsewhere. But I think someone is going to end up doing that. There were so many things that happened today. I cannot even keep up. All day today at work, keeping up. Could not do it. But we're going to do our best today. We have so much to talk about.
Yeah, let's fucking roll. Because we got what? 15, 20 legitimate fantasy moves in the last 2 days?
Yeah. So normally we do the, big, fun fact. No, fun fact today, running backs got busy. I mean, that's the fun fact of today. Fun fact of the day. Here we go. Running back market was dead. Nah. It was reborn like a phoenix from the ashes. It was reborn and remolded, which shows you how bad this running back class is. This running back class has got to be viewed as so bad. Teams are actively trading for running backs and signing them to pretty decently sized contracts. I mean,
yeah. I'm not so sure about the – I've seen this take, and I don't really think that that's as true. Like, the running back market was super active, and people were signing a lot of running backs, really good running back free agent class. But I'm not convinced, really, that the deals are substantially better than what we've seen in previous years. Like, last year's free agency class wasn't very impressive. I would say that Montgomery and Sanders, who kind of were the headlines of that class – were probably perceived more in like the Pollard Swift tier of backs than in the Barkley Jacobs tier of backs. I mean, I have some issues with Josh Jacobs' contract, but he was clearly perceived at a higher level. I mean, we saw Derrick Henry, who for my money is still plausibly the best running back available in this year's free agency, go 2 for 16. That's a steal of a contract. Aaron Jones goes 1 for 7. Like, even the Jacobs contract, you see the 4 for 48, but that's a lot of that's funny money. And they have optionality to get out of that really whenever they want to. So outside of maybe the Saquon contract that's like pretty close to maybe the contract that like Nick Chubb signed, but we're definitely still a long way away or a long way removed from like the Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara. I mean, I think the big thing is teams are generally just playing it 1 to 2 years at a time now with these veteran running backs, right? They're either tagging them or they're signing them to 1 or 2 year deals or fake 3 to 4 year deals. It's not as much the cap hit, but they're not doing the 5, 6, 4 year like actual real extensions that we used to see, which is, disappointing for the players, but it certainly makes sense for the teams.
I think this is just kind of like a new normal for running backs, and probably what we'll expect is, like you said, the 2 to 3, a lot of guaranteed money on these contracts, at least up front. Derrick Henry's is $9 million up front, and I just want to point out how silly the Packers look, like you said, with this Josh Jacobs deal. They cut Aaron Jones, eat a dead cap total, of which I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure it was significant.
So Yeah, I can break down the math on a little bit if you want.
Yeah, please. And then I'll continue.
Yeah, so effectively what happened was Aaron Jones would have been owed, without any pay cut or anything, would have been owed $17 million this year. They eat a dead cap charge on him of $12 million. They pay Josh Jacobs a four-year, $48 million contract that features 12.5 guaranteed. But the way that it's structured is that that 12.5 is a signing bonus, and that gets stretched over 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then the actual cap, the base salary, is almost negligible for the first 2 years. It's like $1 million and $1.5 million. And then it absorbs a much higher portion of the contract over the last 2 years. So the net result is that for this year, it's almost no impact on the money. They eat a dead cap charge of 12. They would have paid him 17 if they would have had to retain the services. Now they're paying Jones 12. They're paying Jacobs 5. So it's basically the same thing, except if they had just stayed with Jones, they would have been entirely out of that money. Now the signing bonus is still spread across those years, so there still is some obligations to Josh Jacobs going forward for the rest of the signing bonus. But they, for the purposes of this year, it's basically the same result. But they get, you know, 3 years younger, they get a different running back.
So one of my biggest problems with this is I think we all have pretty good eyes in terms of running backs who look janky and a little bit washed. That wasn't Aaron Jones last year. It was kind of Josh Jacobs. Now, granted, Jacobs' team looked woof. Like, the team looked bad when he touched the ball. How much of it was his fault? I don't know. It wasn't that long ago that I was on Market Report talking about how I liked Josh Jacobs as a decent buy. Now I think he's going to outprice himself, because remember, all of these moves have dynasty implications, big time. Like, big, you're already, if you're mid-drafts, like I'm mid-draft right now, Lucas, you are as well, already seeing guys go higher than they were the day before. Barkley and Jacobs both gone earlier than they did earlier than they did go before. So that's definitely going to be a thing. But I don't know how much I love Josh Jacobs there. I mean, A.J. Dillon is gone as well, so that backfield looks like it is to himself. So in terms of fantasy winners, he's probably number one at running back.
He's a massive winner. He's a massive winner, fantasy speaking. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better environment in terms of Matt LaFleur's run game scheme, in terms of an offense that we feel really good about going into next
play
year.
Caller.
It's a tough sell for me from a real-life signing. Like, I didn't like the deal that they wound up giving him. Most of the metrics that I focus on, forced missed tackle rate, explosive run rate, success rate over expectation, yards after contact per attempt, and overall rush yards over expectation per attempt. 49 backs with at least 90 carries last year. That's the sample cutoff that I use. And he failed to finish in the top 35 in any of those five metrics. So he was bottom third of a qualified sample in all five of those key indicators. And like Tom said, like, really bad environment. So I think it's, you know, I talked about all this in the column that I wrote up yesterday on the top five free agency signings. I think that in general, you know, team environment's more likely to be underrated by a lot of these advanced metrics than it is to be overrated, even though it's in theory attempting to isolate running back play. So I doubt that Josh Jacobs is actually quite as bad as those metrics suggest, especially since that's a clear step below where he's been for the rest of his career. But I would just say, if you're paid as a top of the market running back, right, when we're looking at metrics, especially that aim to isolate your performance, you should really never be below average across the board. You look at Saquon Barkley, for instance, you know, he's a running back. I don't know that he's exactly what he once was in his peak, but you look at him, he was playing for the Giants, an equally, if not worse, environment, probably worse environment. At least the Raiders had Devontae Adams out there as like one other good offensive player. And, you know, Barkley was average in some of the metrics, still posted a very positive rush yards over expectation, still posted a top 15 explosive run rate. It was better than Jacobs across the board in every single metric. So to me, that's more a picture of a player that's really good, who's trying to scrape by, you know, this negative environment that he's in. Jacobs, to me, looks like he's going to be more of a product of his environment. So I think his numbers go up in Green Bay, because anyone's would, but I don't think he's a difference-making running back.
I think Barkley might be the better real life running back, but for fantasy, that Eagles goal line situation is going to terrify me. So we know that Swift was tilting.
Same situation without Jason Kelce.
Well, Jalen Hurts was rushing touchdowns in before the tush push became their go-to play. So he was still vulturing. I believe he had, what, 11 the previous year before the tush push really came in. He's just going to be a vulture. He's like Josh Allen, right? I'd be terrified of any. That's why I don't want to draft James Cook, because his upside is capped by the quarterback who runs it in a lot. I don't think Jalen Hurts is just going to be like, nah, I'm going to not rush these touchdowns. And I think they'll still do it. Maybe he won't have 16. Maybe he has 9. But when you're looking at Saquon Barkley as an upper tier dynasty buy because of this contract, and you're going, oh man, he could have 14 touchdowns this year. Well, he has 8. That is a significant drop in his points per game. So where he might be the better real life running back, I think Jacobs might be the second biggest winner. Cause I think Henry's. Can I also just point out, I am pissed at the Ravens. Can I just, I'm going to sidebar here for a minute, gentlemen. One of my favorite running backs, Derrick Henry, have him in the home league. Very excited that in the home league, I get to trot out Derrick Henry. But I can't trust the Ravens practice field enough to actually let me enjoy this signing. I have watched every running back that plays for that team other than Lamar Jackson blow their knees out. Now I am mortified that the practice field, if I'm the Ravens, I don't even let Derrick Henry practice. Just roll him out there. You know he's good. You know what he can do. Just say, okay, you're going A-gap, baby, and just let him ride. Because I'm mortified. I'm terrified. I'm scared to the point where I'm afraid that I'm going to get excited about this and I'm never going to get to see it actually happen. So fix the practice field. But Derrick Henry was great last year. His rushing yards over expected was better than it was the last couple of years. His missed tackles forced per touch, better. His explosive run rate, better. He was just on one of the worst offenses in the league last year. Went through multiple quarterbacks, one of whom is still a free agent, Ryan Tannehill. Little surprising to me. But he just might be cooked. But I love this Derrick Henry thing. I don't think anything changes for him except for getting a better offense. And he's probably not getting the same touch total. I think 280 touch Derrick Henry is gone on that team. They just rotate. Justice Hill will see more carries than he rightfully should. I mean, we just know that's going to happen, but kind of insane.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Dude, I've watched that team too long. They're going to put him in for no reason. They're going to put him in for no reason.
This is the same argument I'd say about the Eagles. Like they've had a bunch of scrubs. Like I don't think that how they operate their team with other backs, how they're going to operate with Saquon Barkley. Like I don't think how the Ravens act with Gus and Justice Hill says a lot about how they're going to operate with Henry.
Do you remember Justice
will play? He'll play every third and long in the 2-minute drill.
Do you remember when in 2019 the Ravens signed Mark Ingram, and I was pissed that they kept trotting out Gus Edwards onto the field? Rookie Gus Edwards onto the field.
Yeah, and,
I
was like, and Mark why Ingram is, he on is not the Derrick Henry.
No, but he was better than Gus Edwards. Like, so it just, they do this. They rotate backs, and I'm going to need to see it to believe it to be this. That's what I'm saying.
I'm sure Hill will have a role. Like, he'll have a role because Henry, I mean, Henry never plays 80% of the snaps, right? He never plays third downs. He doesn't play 2 minutes. So I think he'll have a role. But we're getting inside the 10. I think we know who's in the game.
I mean, we might get a Jamal Williams-esque touchdown run from Derrick Henry this year. It's going to be pretty insane. But let's talk some other signings here. You had mentioned DeAndre Swift. Now, this one really irked the Herbert believers, the Roshan believers. He's their back. I mean, it's pretty plain and simple that DeAndre Swift's going in there as the running back, but good, bad, Lucas?
I mean, yeah, it does suck. It makes me happy that I wasn't able to get as many Roshan shares as I was originally wanting. Right now, I am a little bit more concerned about Herbert's workload than Roshan's, just for where I believe that their roles are going to be overlapping more with Swift coming in. But we'll see. I don't think at this point in the offseason we really have any sort of warm, fuzzy feeling about predicting what this Chicago offense is going to look like next season. We can follow the money. Lots of money going to DeAndre Swift. They have a lot of capital tied up in DJ Moore. That's basically all I feel comfortable with. And then, of course, with Gerald Everett coming in. So I don't really know what's going to happen, but they're putting athletes on this team. So it should at least be interesting.
Taking an athlete off the team if they can help it with Justin Fields, but that's get him out of there. I don't know.
I mean, if anybody listens to me or reads my stuff knows that like I obviously hate this player, and I think the signing makes their team substantially worse. but like they're gonna use him. I don't know why teams keep running this guy out there. He's soft, he can't read blocks, he has bad hands, he doesn't run reliable routes. He's horrible in pass protection. Everything that he provides an explosive playmaker. Herbert can do better in the running game. Roshan is a more reliable utility back. Basically, to me, the only value add that he brings to their backfield is as a receiver in an early downs and screens and as a route runner. So would I made this move? Obviously not. But like I understand that Swift is clearly going to get a lot of the work. At least in week one, that's their plan. They gave him a contract that basically locks him into their team for the next 2 years. $15.3 million guaranteed. And it's clearly a player, you know, and this is why I've always sort of done this in and out thing with Swift. It's like, as much as I don't like him qualitatively, I understand that he has the type of attributes in terms of his explosive athletic ability and his receiving ability that creates fantasy value when he gets touches. And so to me, it's always this touch and go thing of there's this player that I think is very unreliable that I don't think teams should or will continue to trust for an extended period of time. But if and when they do, he has a lot of fantasy value. And we kind of oscillate as a community between being overly confident in him getting those touches to, you know, underconfident in him getting those touches. That's when we start to see his market shift. And that's when we can kind of play both sides of it. So you know, if you have Swift, you should be really excited. It's a great opportunity in an ascending offense. It's about to get the number one overall pick, potentially some receiver help. You know, if you, it's not a controversial statement. Like it's a 100% chance of drafting Caleb Williams. Anyone else says anything otherwise, a total donkey. And if they don't draft Caleb Williams, I'll wear a donkey hat on this show.
Okay.
For the entirety of draft night. So we're over with this nonsense, but no. would I want to trade for Swift now? No. Like if you, the time to trade for Swift would have been before this bet, it's paid off.
Yeah.
If you want to ride it out, have fun. I don't know. I've seen people like that think about Swift kind of the way that I do, bring up the Miles Sanders comparison. To me, like I didn't like the Miles Sanders last year. I drafted none of them. I still don't think that what happened was like the single most likely result. Like that still required him basically having like a zeroth percentile outcome. And so will I get off some jokes if Swift has that happened to him? Obviously. You know, I used to pray for times like this, but that's not my base expectation. I think you'll probably see 50, 60% of the touches at least for the entire year and pretty much all the fun touches.
Yeah. I mean, geez, Swift is going to be, I think he's probably going to still end up being just an RB2. I think he's just going to still be a mid range RB2 unless he just gets absolutely peppered with targets. Right. I mean, that's possible, not probable. But hey, let's you know what? I'm looking into the chat. The running backs are fun and we're probably going to head back to them. But let's talk about a player who I don't feel like his injury is priced into his cost enough. However, let's talk about Kirk Cousins. Let's talk about Kirk Daddy, because Falcons fans, you've been praying for it. You've been waiting. You've been waiting so long.
Speaking of used to pray for times like this.
waited so long since the prime of Matt Ryan, but you got your guy. The guy has been had. Now, coming off the injury, I don't know. I want to be a fly in the wall to Kirk Cousins' contract negotiations, because this dude is just making guaranteed bank hand over fist. Now let's break it down a little bit. They could easily win this division. This division is a joke. So automatically with another top 10 pick, hopefully they go tackle. I'm going to guess it's going to be a defensive player, defensive head coach. I'm going to guess it's going to be like an edge rusher.
They really need an edge rusher. Like, that's to me their biggest need.
So. Everyone does need one. I would just be drafting a tackle to protect Kirky Boy, but we'll see. But let's talk about it. London, Pitts, Kirk, Bijan. This team, let's also not forget new play caller. Play caller coming from a tree that you want to have calling your place. I mean, what was it? 7 out of the 10 best offenses all came from a McVay or Shanahan tree last year. Absolutely disgusting. So let's talk about it. Again, I don't feel like his price was baking in the injury. I think people were already drafting Bijan, Pitts, and London expecting this move already. I don't really see a world where their prices shift much at this point, but I'll leave the floor open to you guys for initial thoughts, all in. Do they just become the Vikings now? Like, is it, how is this going to pan out to you guys? I'll start with Jacob.
Go for it, Lucas. Go for it. I got my Swift brand.
You guys waited too long.
I was trying to be deferential. I talked too much on the show. I'm too aggressive. I was trying to give Lucas the floor here.
I mean, just from a fantasy perspective, we've already seen Drake London move up half a round in ADP. Thomas, I know you in the draft we're doing right now, we're getting some stuff for taking Kyle Pitts where he did. I think that was early round 4 whenever you took Kyle Pitts, and people were already starting to make comments in the chat about it. But now that's looking like where he might end up settling. And I will say that it is tie-in premium, but he is, before he even like actually is lined up to take a snap, he's already helping all of these other players' values based off of what people think that they can be, which I think makes it really fun to be those owners right now. And it's not quite to the point where I'm willing to sell some of them, but it's starting to get pretty close right now. Especially like if you can upgrade from Drake London now up into like one of the elite tiers, and you're just having to pay that much less.
Drake London.
That's what I was going to ask.
Who are you considering a material upgrade on Drake London?
I'm talking about like moving on from Drake London on to say like Puka Nacua, moving up, trying to get into the Garrett Wilson tiers, the Amon-Ra St. Brown tiers. There's still that gap.
How much are you paying to go to those guys?
It's starting to close.
But you'd be willing to. Ooh.
Right now, I would be looking at potentially including a future first to move up from Drake London.
Wow.
To one of those tiers.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd do that at all.
Like, I'm easy. Give me London.
Yeah. Well,
I think London's in that tier with all those guys for me.
Yeah, as of right now, for sure. Because look, we know his peripherals are really good. Now, I understand what Lucas is saying because he has been so massively disappointing and people might have player fatigue. Right. So they've just been waiting for this moment, for this news, so they can go, you know what? I'm going to move off of him. He has been very good. Like I said, Kirk was injured. We've got a new play caller, a defensive minded head coach on a run for. I get all the reasons that are kind of lining up.
Why do we think run first? What gives us the run first impression?
Because it's a defensive minded head coach that has an absolute like a dual running back.
Yeah, Raheem Morris has coached both sides of the ball at times. He's got Kirk, who consistently leaves high pass rate offenses.
He's
got Zach Robinson at OC, who, I mean, almost everybody from the McVay tree, basically except for Matt LaFleur, almost all lead high pass rate offenses and high pace offenses. Like, the Bengals are always high pass rate over expectation team. Kevin O'Connell's been a plus pass rate over expectation team. I'm not expecting this to, like, I don't think it's going to be the Chiefs, but to me, this is like, I'll probably project them at like +1 to +3 pass rate over expectation.
I think that's fair. Like, I think that'll come towards the end of the year, though. Again, you're getting Kirk off injury, right? I think it could be a very much so a slower start to the year. At least that's what I am expecting. Like I said, new offense, new culture, new everything. Especially, like I said, coming off that injury, way easier to just turn around and hand the ball off to an absolute workhorse. Arguably, two absolute workhorses. So, again, I can see why someone looking at this Drake London situation and seeing like guys like Nico Collins or Pittman or Rice going, right around in the same area going, I'll either let somebody else fall on that or finally getting your ticket to move off of him if that's what you've already wanted to do. I'm not. I am simply stating that I get it. But I was very surprised when I went and checked and seen that London was only 22. And now we're reasonably getting an opportunity to see 130 Kirk Cousins targets. You prayed for days like this, and now you got it. And now you're getting, look, we know Kirk Cousins can support a fantasy relevant tight end. We've seen that. So now you're looking at Kyle Pitts in this situation. It's wheels up for me for all of them. I'm well, not selling.
Pitts is the one that I think is really interesting. I mean, Bijan is kind of a little bit, you know, a little less beside the point of the other guys, just in that he's already going at the 202. And I just think his value is like the least affected by the boost, and it's the least inhibited. If they didn't get it done, I think he was going to kind of do his thing regardless. But in terms of the other two, I'm with you on London. Like, I'm not interested in selling Drake London.
No.
To me, he's now like solidly kind of wherever I'd put Chris Olave. I'd put Drake London one spot higher, in the sense that I think that they're pretty much the same level of talent, but I prefer Kirk over Derek Carr for that situation by a bit, especially prefer the play caller. So that's kind of where I'm at with London, and it's going to take a while until his value reflects that. Like, he's still going prior to this Kirk news, and with, I think, a general understanding that this Kirk news is pretty possible, was still going towards the end of the fourth. So I'm going to be very overweight London. Pitts is really interesting, because I think that that answer does kind of depend on how far he moves up the board. His current price is the tight end six that's in the middle of the fifth round.
Yeah.
If that price sticks, I'd like to have 100% Kyle Pitts. I think that is really mispricing his level of upside. But he's a little bit more interesting to me, because London, like, we have 2 years in which all his peripherals are quite strong across the board. And even has been able to have efficiency. You know, he's been able to show 2.07, 1.87 yards per route run in the context of a really poor offensive environment. Like, that's substantially better than, for instance, even what Garrett Wilson has put up in that hellish environment. So with Pitts, you know, you really have to go back to year one to find a year where he was able to dominate efficiency. His peripherals volume-wise went up in year two, but of course the efficiency craters, and, you know, that some of that's luck, some of it's Mariota, but you can have some questions about that. And then last year, he just was straight up, you know, not nearly as good as he was the first 2 years from a talent perspective, really across the board. And the question is, how much was that was injury? And then even if it is injury, how much of that can he get back when he's healthy, right? Or because we see players get injured and we say, oh, well, it's the injury, but it's always the injury, right? Like, sometimes people just get injured and they never fully get over it. So if the market gets towards like, oh, it's 2022 again and Pitts is going all the way to the moon, that I kind of understand taking advantage of that sell, because I do think there's a little bit more fragility to him from an injury perspective, from a talent perspective, and from a role perspective, right? That's been the other thing that's kind of snake bit in Pitts, is not being trusted to run block and then getting deployed in a way that's not very beneficial for a tight end, where they kind of end up using him more like a receiver. How do they use him in this new offense? Hopefully well, but it's just a little bit harder to say. So I have a lot more confidence in London from like a four perspective, where I don't think that bet is going to dust. So I'm willing to take a shot riding on that upside. But like, everything's all right in front of there for Pitts. I think he has a really, really high ceiling. Like, I still think he has the highest ceiling of any tight end based on how he can be used down the field in his athletic profile. But this year is really a make or break year for his dynasty value, where to me, I see a world where he's a, you know, early round two startup pick next year, and a world where he's like a round 12 startup pick next year. And it really is going to see how it goes. So right now I'm buying at the round fifth, but like, you get into that like round three area, like, I think it would be pretty reasonable if you told me you're selling. And I see you're talking with Darnell Mooney.
We don't need to talk about Darnell Mooney.
Right? I think it's good news in that investing that much means hopefully now we don't have to worry about like a Roma Dunze at eight, that kind of situation.
Yeah, the Mooney hive, I don't, it's not, in my opinion, it might be better for like flex play stuff, but he's not. I had people asking me
in best ball.
Should we? Yeah, exactly.
AJ Osborne has been fun in best ball.
Yeah, exactly. People are asking me, oh, should I take like a two thirds for Mooney? And I'm, yes, I think. Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you almost at 100%, except I'm comfortable taking Pitts in the late three. That's exactly where I took him. I took him before this news. I was expecting this news. It was a gamble. Didn't like what else was on the board. Right? When you're looking in terms of guys like Ayuk, Jonathan Taylor, Tua, Waddle, it was just Kyle Pitts for me in this situation. So I'm still buying. We're talking about a guy who put up, you know, just over 1,000 yards, was at 15 yards per reception with a super dusty quarterback in a poor offense who, let's be honest, the jokes of Kyle Pitts scoring a touchdown, plentiful. Kyle Pitts turns in six more touchdowns and finishes with 850 yards and, let's say, just a light 65 receptions, easily a top 10 tight end, and all of a sudden people are right back in. So like you said, he'd have to do so little to help himself out in this offense. I think it's almost impossible barring another injury. So I'm just immediately right back in. I'm not hesitating. I'm going to get burned. You can at me. The at is at El Nostra Thomas. It's fine. You won't hurt my feelings much.
Is he now your tight end three?
I think he's still my tight end two. Him.
Okay, so I didn't know if he was above Trey McBride for you or.
Oh, then sorry. Yes, he is tight end three. Yes.
Yeah, so yeah, I got into this debate with Paul last night, and we both agreed on Bowers at one.
I don't agree.
And then we were torn on Pitts versus Laporta versus McBride. And I think we ultimately came down on Pitts too, but that's, I don't know. I'm a little bit more. So anyway, but to me, those are the four. And I don't know if we've even reached a full answer. Like they'll be almost like four back to back to back to back in my rankings once I update after free agency.
Yeah. I don't have Bowers ranked at the moment. I'm sure I will, but he's not going to be at one for me. Laporta was just too damn good. McBride was too damn good. Both are locked into great roles. And then, of course, I have Pitts at three. I could see Bowers passing Pitts for me, but he's going to be hard-pressed to get past Trey and Laporta.
My concern with the Laporta thing, and I guess we don't really know whether this is going to be a McBride concern yet, kind of depending on what they do in the draft. But my concern with Laporta in particular is, like, I think he's obviously, like, infinitely safer than Bowers and Pitts. And so I totally see the argument for liking him, like, substantially over those guys. But he doesn't really have a downfield usage profile. He didn't in college either, so I don't think the way he was deployed was very surprising. And then he's pretty much locked in with Amon-Ra St. Brown for presumably life, who is already like one of the best intermediate target earners and is still a really young player. So I know that he's young, but it's just, I'm not sure if compared to other, like to your generic 22, 23-year-old, the Laporta has quite as much room to actually grow beyond what he was in his rookie season, where I guess when I see Laporta, I just wonder, are we buying like a young player because we think they have the capacity to explode, or are we buying a young player because we're very, very confident they're going to be very, very good for a very long time? And I think it's the latter for sure. I'm just a little hesitant with like, how big is the upside really? And, you know, I guess it's just that usage profile with Pitts that's so tempting, where, you know, he's the guy that actually gets the wide receiver level ADOT. He's the guy that's able to get the usage on seams and posts consistently. Like, if you could ever put it together, to me, his true ceiling is just so much higher. But then you have the massive risk factor of, like, what if they never put it together? Ultimately, for me, luckily, Laporta goes, like, way higher. So I'm just drafting other guys kind of where Laporta goes. And it's a little bit easier for me to talk myself into the tight end pick where Pitts goes.
I just think that one thing that the dynasty community does a lot, and I mean in with tight ends, and I used to be the biggest TJ Hockenson hater. I mean, I called him TJ Blockinson for years. As you mentioned, the hyper athletic deep ball profile tight end is always what we want. But I think that there's just been a shift in usage. So guys like Trey McBride, right? The way like you were mentioning, you weren't sure if he fit the athletic profile that you wanted, or is he more just a middle of the field, you know, catch and go down type tight end, et cetera, et cetera. And like you're saying with Laporta and how he got used, if Bowers came into the league and had the exact same season that Laporta did, we would be pants off. Like, it would be unreal, sure. Amazing. So I just don't think that a guy who just did that in Sam Laporta, I can't put Bowers ahead of him. Because again, if Laporta had like a Dalton Kincaid type season, I'd be like, okay. Like, I was really high in Kincaid. Then I went back and looked into his season and went, okay, I'm probably going to be way lower on him than consensus. But Laporta's got the spot. He's got the job. He's got the offense. He's got everything that we would hope Brock Bowers got. Don't think I can put him up there. But getting back to Kyle Pitts, I could see myself putting Bowers ahead of him, even with the Kirk Cousins news. I mean, because like you said, there's a real chance he's a round 12 pick next year. Like, that's not a non-zero chance. But I just can't get with you on the Bowers number one. I can't get there. Nah, can't do that.
Oh, I get it. I mean, the floor with McBride and Laporta is like rock solid.
Yeah. What'd we say on the show before? We're in a golden age of tight ends. I think we really are. But just not number one. Not yet. And I'm willing to go down with that ship. I think there's a couple other running backs that we should touch on. I think the wide receivers, pretty much non-existent in the free agent period. Gabe Davis signed. Okay, that's fine and whatever. Calvin Ridley is pretending like he didn't see the Patriots' messages and DMs. He's just kind of ignoring them. T. Higgins got tagged, wants to get traded. Darnell Mooney signed. Deontay Johnson got traded, which I think will be a good one to touch on in a little bit. But there's a couple other running backs that I want to hit. Eckler signed with the Commanders. He's dust. He's pretty much toast. He's taking over Antonio Gibson's role. That's toast to me. But Devin Singletary landing with the Giants, I actually really like for fantasy purposes. I think he ended up in one of the few spots where they're going to run the ball and there's nobody else. I mean, Eric Gray. Loved him to death. It's over. It's so Jover with Eric Gray. So I think Singletary is actually the one that I'm sneaky buying right now out of all these mid-tier
ones.
Devin
Singletary. I mean, he got like 80% of the touches last year and it was like fine.
I mean, he was carrying people for quite a while. Like with
carrying, how many points per year did he have last year? What, 12, 13? Like if we remove like the first month when he was
coming from a guy who like touts wanting really awful, shitty running backs on his roster.
Yeah.
I don't think you would be.
But I just don't want to ever pay anything for
him. You don't have to pay anything for Devin Singletary now. He's pretty much free.
Yeah, like I'll take him. I mean, there's going to be so many guys, it seems like, that are going to score between like 10 to 13 points per game, the way that this free agency looks like it's shaking out to me. That like, so Singletary's fine. It's hard for me to have like a favorite. Like I just feel like, you know, if I'm in a startup right now, like I'm pretty willing to invest in Hall and in Bijan. And then I just like pretty much not really looking at the running back position until like round 12. And then I just like, I don't know. Give me any, whoever you guys don't want, right? Like you don't want Singletary, you want Gus. You know, does anybody want Chase Brown, Zach Moss? Pollard, Spears, like just whoever you guys don't want, I'll just take them. And Singletary is probably among the more likely candidates for guys people don't want. I'll give you that much. That's
right.
People never want him. So maybe you develop Chuba. It's another one like Chuba Hubbard's probably going to just like dominate a backfield this year and do not that much with it. But like you can put him in your lineup if you want to. Brian Robinson. Eckler versus Singletary argument breaking out in the chat right now.
I saw that,
If you had to pick one in Dynasty, both of you guys, would you pick Eckler or Singletary?
I would pick Devin Singletary for sure.
Oh, I'm going to pick Eckler just because I think his ceiling is just a little bit higher.
His ceiling is what Antonio Gibson was, which was not good.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. It depends like what does Devin Singletary do for you, right? Because I don't think Eckler has anything left. And I think he's like probably just a third down back.
Yeah.
But depending on your league, like you know, Devin Singletary is not explosive and he doesn't really do much. So like if he doesn't do anything for your team, then I could see you just saying like, sure, give me Austin Ekeler and like the theoretical contingent upside because he is capable of catching a lot of passes. But so maybe I asked that question wrong. I guess I would take Ekeler too. If you're asking me who do I think is going to score more fantasy points next year, Singletary. Solidly. I would take Singletary like clearly over him in best ball or redraft, but I could get you being in a position where Singletary is totally meaningless to you.
I agree. I think the biggest
I love Brian Robinson, by the way. He's like a massive buy to me. I don't fear Ekeler at all. I would be very into Brian Robinson.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Singletary signing with the Giants is that the 2/3 that you were trading to get Singletary on your playoff rosters, they didn't completely go away. You didn't just flush them down for 4 games at the end of your season. He's probably still going to be someone you can put into your flex spots. I don't know that. I think that it's a fine spot. He should have a workload, but it's not one that gets me all excited about. Oh yay, another season of Devin Singletary.
Yeah, I just think volume drives fantasy at the position. And if one guy is going to be locked into it, I think it is Singletary. I mean, it just is what it is at this point. I mean, I know people think that EK's got something left, and maybe he does. Maybe he defies the odds, and he opts out of this 2-year contract after 1 year and gets kind of another mini bag somewhere. I just don't see it. I don't see it at all. Singletary won't be the 1A, won't get the volume.
I mean, who do you think will be the 1A?
Who would? Yeah, exactly. I mean, at this point, I don't see the Giants spending draft capital on a running back. That would concern me.
Yeah, and I mean, I just don't think there are Eric running Gray's backs not that concern it. Me.
No.
Like, I mean, that's my issue with this draft class. Like, to me, there's only, like, rookie running backs that would immediately be materially better than Devin Singletary to start off their career. Like, a healthy Brooks, which isn't an actual thing, or maybe Benson. Right. And otherwise, to me, it's all guy or maybe Corum. And beyond that, to me, it's like not guys that I'm expecting to really have lead roles in year one unless a team just totally gives it to them. And, right. and they give Singletary a decent amount of money. So I'm sure that they'll draft someone. But I think that that's discrediting Singletary to me to say that all the top 8 rookie running backs would take over him. I mean, maybe by week 13, it's like a more even split or whatever, but I don't know. To me, like if they're drafting Marshawn Lloyd in round 4, like cool. I just think Singletary is like still getting 70% of the touches for the first 6 weeks, and then maybe it moves in from there. I don't think that much of Singletary, but I mean, I think very little of this running back class, and I would say the NFL, or at least from year one. I think the NFL is kind of telling you what they think of this running back class in that every team was like racing to go sign free agent running backs.
Yeah.
Some of whom are like Devin Singletary.
Right.
Not that exceptional.
We touched on that in the very beginning of the program, right? The way running backs got scooped up and this quickly hasn't been seen in a while. So I think the NFL really knows what they have in this draft class. I think there are some minor winners in here that we can talk about just real quick. I mean, right now, Zamir White, he's sitting good. He's dodged all the major bullets. I don't think there's a free agent running back left that would concern me if I were Zamir White. So now, again, we're just waiting for the draft. But I think Zach Moss's deal with the Bengals is very good for him. I think Chase Brown is still going to have his role, but he obviously wasn't the 3-down back.
That's a nice backfield. I think we can already kind of like that's one I feel solid about, right? Like, I think we kind of know what it is now. Zach Moss is going to be there at least out of the gate. He's going to be their lead on early downs. And then we're going to have Chase Brown as a change of pace back, and he'll probably play some passing downs. And then we'll see how it goes, right? We'll see if Chase Brown can demonstrate that he's better over a period of time or what Zach Moss will do. But that's a really fun spot. You know, that's 2 guys, I would guess, if you want to stream RB2s that you could potentially start every week.
Yep, agreed. And I like Gus Edwards with the Chargers. I mean, he gets reunited with Greg Roman. They're obviously going to draft a running back. A lot of people think it's Corum. So he's either going to be a nice RB2 for touchdowns and like 800 yards on the year, or he's just going to exist to really irritate fucking everybody. But I like that signing. I think he'll be just fine. People who have him, who are hoping to get production out of him, are probably not unhappy at the moment. So I think that's fine.
Gus Edwards is going to be the 80th consecutive season of streaming Gus Edwards for 9 points per game, hoping he falls in the end zone.
Right. Yeah. That's so damn true. But I do want to talk about one player.
Extremely popular.
Yes. I do want to talk about one player who you have loved for many years, going to a team that already had a back with his skill set. This feels like a very weird signing, but Tony Pollard gets a 3-year deal with the Titans. This is the one to me that I feel like we need to talk about, because Spears was already moving up draft boards. People were already drafting him as if he was a 3-down back. I have said on this program, and I've said on the market report, that I did not think he was a 3-down back. I expected an LDD runner. I expected the Zach Moss, the Gus Edwards, the guy to handle the early down workload. Instead, what we have are two players with, I feel, have the same skill set. Jacob, I know you're the unbiased prince of Tony Pollard. Walk us through, how do you think this backfield is going to go? Because to me, this backfield is the biggest
one. Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of like, as a person who's hoping for Pollard to land in a good spot, I'm really happy that he ends up getting a pretty solid contract. We don't know what that's still one of the few that we don't really know the structuring on. We just know that it's 3 for 24. So presumably, you see that kind of reporting, I'd be pretty surprised if the second year isn't at least partially guaranteed, but we really don't know at this point. It's going to be a really interesting backfield because, yeah, like you said, the fit's a little awkward. The other teams reportedly that were in on Pollard were the Cowboys, the Vikings, the Giants. All of those have been a lot easier to see how that comes together. I mean, I think we know it's going to be a split, and that's probably good for both these backs, right? I totally agree with you. The idea of Tyjae Spears, you know, a 200-pound rookie with no ACLs walking 300 touches this year is, that's just not how the NFL works. So both Pollard and Spears, I think, have proven to be, depending on what we get out of Tony Pollard health-wise, at least, but we've seen examples of them being really, really effective players on a certain limitation of touches. So the idea of Tony Pollard and Tyjae Spears in a vacuum as 220 touchbacks sounds awesome. The issue, and I agree with you, is that ideally they're getting the same 220 touches and that someone else is getting the other touches, right? And so what happens to this backfield? Well, I certainly don't think we're like waiting for a third guy. Like they spent a third round pick on Spears and they spent $8 million on Pollard. That's more than enough that anybody needs to invest in an NFL backfield. So these are their two guys. And I could see one of two things happen. The worst thing to me would be Tony Pollard. They say, well, look, you've been the feature back, so you'll get the feature back role. And he gets kind of the trap back of the 200 carries and none of the fun stuff. And then Spears gets limited to, pretty much the role that he had last year. And I think that's bad for Pollard. It's bad for Spears. It's bad for the Titans. And hopefully what they're looking at is new coach coming in, whole new team, right? We're coming in. We're going to be running Cincinnati Bengals. We're spread offense now.
Yeah.
And we're going to be in shotgun. And we're not looking for the same things that other teams are looking for in the running back. We have a team now that's going to be running a spread shotgun system where we don't really have a lot of receivers. And so we're looking for running backs that are prioritizing versatility and playmaking. And we know that we're not going to be able to necessarily find a guy like this that's going to be able to do it over 350 touches unless they're Christian McCaffrey. So why don't we get two running backs who can kind of fit this style, who can be interchangeable and can each handle half of the workload? That's the dream. That's what I'm hoping this Titans offense is thinking. That's the only way to me the signing makes sense. That's the way that would be best, I think, for the team. But we're just going to have to wait and see. So I'm hoping that they're just kind of running more of a spread-based run game, that they don't need as many of those grinding two tight end inside carries, and that they have thought about their decisions before making them. But I'm also seeing this in the chat I just want to respond to about, like, can a team win a Super Bowl with Zach Moss? Come on, folks. Like, yeah. Like,
yes.
Teams won a Super Bowl with Isaiah Pacheco. Like,
Clyde and Dallaire.
Teams won a Super Bowl with CJ Anderson. Like, it's just, Zach Moss is perfectly effective. Like, it's, he's fine. He can be a totally league average starting running back. Chase Brown can be a perfectly fine complimentary running back. Like, that backfield's good. I think they'll get everything they need out of that backfield. Like, I think, you know, I think that's kind of what we're seeing in the NFL right now, is there's teams that either really value running back play or they really don't. And Titans clearly are one of those teams that really value running back play, right? They spent actual capital on Spears. They spent actual money on Pollard. And that's a team that wants something else out of their running back room. They want that dynamic element, because hopefully that's where their dynamism is coming from, because they only have one dude, right? They have Hopkins. That's it. And then hope maybe they draft someone.
Yeah.
Other teams, like the Bengals, are saying our dynamism of our offense comes from Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, right? All we really need of our running back position is just enough.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of guys that can get you just enough. Day three running backs get you just enough. Zach Moss types can get you just enough. And I think that's kind of why we're seeing now some of these teams that you wouldn't think need running backs, like Green Bay, saying, no, we need to prioritize this position. That's just how we operate as a franchise. I'm not saying one is good and one is bad. It's just something that we're seeing. And then what ends up happening from a fantasy perspective to me is you get a lot of guys scoring 11 points per game, because you get situations like the Titans where they're probably putting more resources than, you know, necessary into the running back position. Same with the Bears, right? I think that they're going clearly above and beyond what you actually really need to spend to achieve adequacy in the position. And so because of that, they're going to get more efficiency out of the room, but they're going to have less touches available to each guy because they have all these talented players in there. And that's going to bring down fantasy production. And on the flip side, you know, you're going to have a team like, you know, the Raiders you brought up, who just have nobody, right? They have Zamir White, who's totally unproven, and they'll probably draft someone who is also probably not that good.
Right.
And that's a team that I think will also probably have a couple guys that score not that many fantasy points, because they just don't really have guys that are capable of scoring 16 fantasy points over an entire season of play, right?
Right.
So you either have these teams that are kind of these wastelands where there's just nobody quite good enough to suck up the volume, or these teams in which they have multiple guys competing over it. And so I think it's going to be kind of a bit of a bimodal running back market.
Like, I know the name isn't sexy, the name isn't hot, but I mean, realistically, we're not talking about a Gardner Minshew-led offense in Cincinnati as well. That's important to remember, right? We're not... Look, Joe Mixon wasn't exactly a model of explosive play, but he got the volume when he needed to have it. That team is just capable of running the ball. They just are. They have a smart offensive coordinator, or I guess coach, calling the plays. I just think he's fine, and he's the perfect bet late in the draft. It's not, you don't have to spend anything on him. So if you're getting 210 touches in the Cincinnati Bengals offense, you're going to be happy with that at the cost.
Yeah, I'm absolutely loving the chat right now. The Jacob cooking, yeah, and then but the meal isn't good. I love that. Sorry, but I think
no, it's fun. I love when the chat's active. I totally disagree with Brian, but I love an active chat. That's for sure.
It's just, what are you with these running backs? What can you possibly be expecting? Like, the NFL is kind of telling us what they think of the NFL draft class by these moves. We always talk about how running backs just don't sign, get contracts. They're dust. They're done. They don't get lead roles, whatever. These guys who have been moderate to okay are getting lead back money in today's NFL. With rookies coming in, you don't see that as often. So what you're getting is, you know, cheap options late in drafts, more than we've probably had in a long time. I just don't know why you wouldn't buy into that. That's exactly what we want. Like, this comes down to the P line. This is just an upgraded version. This is the platinum edition of the P line. Is what this is.
It's a different, it is. And it's like, but it's a different type of environment. Like, I can't remember any other year where we've had this many backfields where it feels like there's like streamable running backs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in terms of just backfields that I think will be really split, or like either split with in favorable environments like the Bengals and the Titans, or where the team is just kind of set up where there's probably just not a lot of running back fantasy production, like the Giants or the Panthers, where it's like, okay, there's one guy But you know, it's like, to me, it's not about like, do running backs matter or not matter. I don't think it's as binary as that. It's just, in every offense, you know, are you going to choose to prioritize your running back? And if you want to run an offense that prioritizes the running back, then you don't get to have a backfield of Devin Singletary and Eric Gray, right? Like, that's not going to work. It's not going to be effective. But you can run an offense with Devin Singletary and Eric Gray. Like, I don't think it's going to work for the Giants because their team's terrible. So it's probably a bad example. But, and their team would be terrible no matter who they had. But, like, you know, what I find something that's really interesting is the Eagles, because they're a team that traditionally has not prioritized the running back position. And they really, really prioritized the running back position this year with Saquon Barkley. And to me, that is also really interesting. You know, we'll see how it works out, but I'm not going to be writing it off. I think what's fascinating is they've always valued the running game, right? They just haven't made the running back a focal point of their running game.
Right.
But at one point, right now, Jason Kelce is retired. And you also look around the league, you see Robert Hunt getting $100 million. You see Lloyd Cushenberry getting over $10 million. You see all these guards and centers, the interior offensive line market's ballooning. And, you know, maybe Howie Roseman is looking there and saying, well, I value having a good running game. The way we've always built that running game is through the offensive line and just valuing a few traits that work within that at our running back position. Well, we lost Jason Kelce. It's going to be more expensive to try and replicate that in free agency than it will be to go and prioritize running back play that can elevate our offensive line, because now the price is coming down on running backs. And so they say, maybe I'd rather spend $12 million on Saquon Barkley than $20 million on an interior offensive lineman. Maybe that's the better use of our resources to juice our running game. And I think it's really interesting, you know, and then you look at, what does that mean for the team? Well, they might run a little bit more of a different offense now that they're trying to, they have another playmaker to work. So I think it's interesting. You know, when you look at the Cowboys last year, right? Like, they just basically, once they realized like 2022 Pollard is not in the room with us anymore and he's not coming back, right? We have a different guy. They just changed how their offense worked. They stopped prioritizing the back. It went from a team in 2022 that had tons and tons of expected fantasy points for running backs to a team that had very little over the second half of the season, because they said our offense at this point is all about Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. And that was a pretty successful offense for them. And they have limited resources with which to spend, because Dak's going to cost a ton of money and CeeDee's going to cost a ton of money and Micah Parsons is eventually going to cost a ton of money. And so they said, okay, we can't build based around the running back anymore. And so their running back room is probably going to be a rookie and like Deontay Foreman or something like that. Yeah. And so it's like, is that what you want? No, but it's a salary cap league. It's scarce resources. And every team in the context of their team has to look up, what are the areas where we can just get by? And what are the areas where we want to build around? And for a team like the Titans, they've chosen, like, we want to try and build around our running back group. And if they get 2022 Tony Pollard and they get the Tyjae Spears that we saw, then that's going to be, I think, a really strong bet, because they're going to be able to allocate a ton of dynamic touches to those guys. But if you're a different team and you have a different players around the Titans and different budgetary constraints, then yeah, I think it's totally viable for the Bengals to be like, we got only so much money. We got a Burrow, or we got a Chase. So yeah, we got to try and win the Super Bowl with Zach Moss and Chase Brown. Because frankly, if we started funneling not just our resources, but our touches into the running back position, instead of throwing it all the time to Jamar Chase, that would be bad for them, right? Like, they shouldn't be... Like, running backs is just kind of a thing that exists for them, and that's fair for them.
I just think it's important. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so with the way that it seems like so many of these teams have been going to establish what their ideal committee is to break up the touches to maximize their offense, you know, just typically how things are being structured, they're not going out getting the one workhorse running back. Do you think that for this rookie class that's coming in, should we be valuing the profiles that fit more of a niche role right now? And so, unfortunately, that means like somebody like a Blake Corum, who would typically, you know, be valued as someone who could come in and take on the 20 plus carries potentially, but he's not going to do it at elite level. He's going to start moving down the board. And someone like Jalen Wright, who could potentially go as like almost a satellite back, but get somebody really fast, get the ball in his hands and go, mm-hmm. or a Trey Benson who will have a much better draft capital. Should we be valuing that type versus the potential for the workhorse role?
I think the workhorse role for running backs outside of like five guys is dead. So I wouldn't be, I would be valuing who lands in a situation where they could do it, or they're just unbelievably talented enough that the NFL says, we're going to draft them high enough because we think you can do it. But the idea that someone from this class is going to come through and just be an absolute workhorse, I'm not valuing them like that, because the NFL right now is telling us they don't value them like that. Not saying it can't happen. I'm just not going into it thinking of it that way.
Well, I think it's a really interesting question. I mean, you'd always, of course, like rather have the workhorse upside. I mean, that's where the running back can really provide value. But I do think for sure that it's worth kind of reconsidering a little bit how we evaluate these running backs, where, you know, traditionally, if every running back room worked like it worked 20 years ago, where everybody mm-hmm. has an RB1 and an RB2.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, I know it wasn't everybody, but obviously that was a way more common way to orient your team than it is now. Like, yeah, you're really just looking for those workhorse profiles, because you're mostly looking for like, is this guy going to be a starting running back? And if they're not a starting running back, are they going to be a backup with a lot of upside? And there wasn't really that much in between other than like a few satellite backs. But I do think now that more of these teams are building around a platoon, right? It's where teams are intentionally saying, well, we'll get one veteran guy to handle one part of the running back equation for $3-4 million. And then we'll probably draft a guy in the mid rounds that can handle the other part. That composite of skill set starts to matter a little bit less than just the being good part, right? Because that's often the question that we get into. It's like, clearly, you know, whenever we get like that Breece Hall, Bijan Robinson level prospect, we're always going to be valuing those guys. But when we get into that late second and into the third round, a lot of the decisions that often faces the running back position is like the running back we're not sure that's good, but that has sort of the size and the potential capacity for receiving, versus running backs that maybe we're more confident in the talent of, but we feel have a lot of limitations on how they can be used. And maybe we should be a little bit more interested in taking some of those more limited backs if there's more teams that are going to be doing that, you know. And ultimately, it's a format question. I think the question that you always just need to ask for is like looking at your team and your format, kind of like we talked about the Singletary Eckler thing. It's like, does a 12 point per game running back do anything for me? Because I think on every team in any format, like that answer can be yes or it can be no.
Yeah.
And like if it's yes, like, yeah, then getting some of those pieces, like a Tyfae Spears is a great example of this, right? Tyfae Spears was going last year in like the late second, and like he clearly had attributes going in his favor, but we had some concerns about how much he could scale up that volume. You know, it's gonna be worthwhile, I think, for some dynasty teams to have Tyjae Spears this year, and for others it'll be entirely inconsequential. So it's really a format question, I think.
Well, I can just say that we have an example that kind of fits kind of this description that just signed with New England. We're talking about a guy in Antonio Gibson who was a spreadsheet nerd favorite, right? He had the size, 6 feet, 230-ish pounds, ran really fast, could catch the football. He was getting all the hype, and it just came down to what the NFL thought of him. So, yeah, you can have these guys, and Benson's a great example of somebody we think could have the size, right? He has the size to be the workhorse. He can catch passes, and he's super athletic. We can love that and everything. The chances of him being that workhorse, though, it's not always there. It's not always there. So we would need the NFL to let us know that. I'm not going to go in and assume that's the case. We also didn't really talk about that contract enough. The Antonio Gibson contract.
I mean, it's just another team that's going to be doing some sort of split, right? I think it'll basically be the same kind of 2-to-1 split, more or less, they gave last year, would be my guess. But I don't know if anyone else has a different take on it.
It is such a New England Patriots signing. I think he fits that, you know, relief running back role really well. I like that it's 3 years, because if they move on from Mondre, who I think is just an infinitely better running back, hopefully they think so too. I think this will hurt Mondre's receiving, though. I think they will put him in there.
Yeah, it's not, but it's not the type of back you want to see Ramondre paired with.
No, you, but you'd also
gone and knock on the guy with the receiving ability, Antonio Gibson.
We can take some relief knowing that Gibson's not exactly a stout pass blocker. So all it's going to take is a whiffed pass pro for this coaching staff to be like, nah. But it should also be noted, this isn't the same coaching staff. So that to me is where the intrigue is. They are lacking weapons all over the place. Just horrendously down bad, where Hunter Henry is like one of their top guys still for some reason. And now you have a guy that can't actually catch passes out of the backfield, and it'll be interesting. But just to your question, Lucas, the reason I brought up Gibson is he fit the player that you were describing to a T, and we saw what happened. Rookie year was okay. Then he had his good sophomore year, right? 14 points per game, fell off a cliff. So you really have to be one of those top end guys that the NFL has told us are top end guys, not just guys that we love and want them to be top guys. Otherwise, you're again, more than just likely destined to be a role player, which is still good. Can still get you 10 to 11 to what Jacob said, 12 points per game. I just think the era of that, like I said, lead back. Yeah. I think it's dead. Before we get out of here, is there a contract you guys want to talk about and hit on before we get out? Lucas, I'll open it up to you.
We talk about. Oh.
I was going to say the only one that kind of stands out to me, and it's not even the contract; it's the Deontay Johnson being traded. I'm watching that a lot right now. I keep seeing everybody tweeting out what George Pickens did whenever Deontay Johnson wasn't in the lineup. I don't think that Pittsburgh's done at the wide receiver position or even close to it. I think that they're going to add somebody fairly high in the draft. They might be adding multiple people in the draft, and I mean, I fully expect them to. So I don't know if that means that we should start adjusting our boards to be moving George Pickens that much higher up. I don't know if that means that we should be leaving him in the same spot because we are anticipating somebody else to come in. I don't quite know how I've decided to handle that situation yet, but I'm at least wanting Deontay Johnson's shares with Bryce Young in Carolina. It's not somebody I'm like really trying hard to go get, but he's somebody that I want now. I like Bryce Young a little bit better too. I think he helps that team out more. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like for fantasy. Lots of unknowns, but it excites me, it intrigues me, and it's a fun thing to talk about. And I'm hoping somebody smarter will be able to tell me what I should do.
Well, I can tell you what to do with George Pickens. If anyone is asking, it's not draft him. I'm just okay missing entirely if he just somehow goes nuclear with Russell Wilson, which no thanks.
I mean, he's a pretty good fit with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, but
like what I didn't like about Deontay there. Like, Deontay's a horrible fit with Russell Wilson. Like, Russell Wilson can basically do one thing, and it's the same. And George Pickens can do one thing, but it's the same thing. So it really fits.
Yeah, offensive pass interference. He's really good at doing that. But I do like this for Deontay Johnson. I mean, Scott Barrett was tweeting this earlier that ESPN's open score, Deontay Johnson has only finished outside of the top five one time, and it was in 2023. He gets open. We know that. I mean, targets are going to be plentiful, so I do like this for Deontay Johnson. I'm not moving him up or down, but my question is buying, and what are you buying for? Because I know that when we get out of here, I'm going to look, and I'm going to have multiple questions about this waiting for me in DMs. So buying or not, and what for if you are? Like, what reasonably could really shift his market?
Pumped to buy Deontay Johnson. I mean, I think it's perfectly reasonable to consider him worth like a late first to an early second, but I don't think you'll actually even need to pay that. So I would maybe go, his value right now is between the 204 and the 205. He's going in the 10th round. I mean, I think that's misvalued. I would offer something like the 201, the 202 would be something I'd be pretty comfortable with sending out there into the world, or equivalent value. That's probably where I would be at. I mean, I think it's great for him. We just saw that Bryce Young, I mean, what he needed more than anything last year was an actual separator. The closest thing they had to that was dusty ass Adam Thielen, who did everything that he could for about half a year until his leg stopped being able to move forward.
Right.
So he really needs this. And I mean, they don't have a first round pick, right? So their first pick, which I hope they use on a receiver, is at 33. They also added 39 in the Brian Burns trade. So I would say the most likely scenario for their receiver room is like, it's probably Deontay, and it's going to be a guy they drafted 33 or 39, and they'll probably let Mingo start in the slot again, even though he was so bad as a rookie.
Oh, he was so bad.
Hopefully, with Deontay and a new rookie, they get a more competent set of weapons for Bryce to be able to actually move the offense. But there's almost nothing they could do where Deontay shouldn't be a heavy favorite to lead this team in targets. So it's a really, really great situation for everybody involved there. As for the Steelers, you know, I think Pickens is a really good fit with Russ. I'll probably never be quite as optimistic as the market on him. If history teaches you anything with the Steelers, it's that they prioritize the hell out of the wide receiver position in the draft. So I think them moving on from Deontay, they're looking at it and saying, hey, great wide receiver draft. See you, Deontay. We're adding one or two guys. Like I'd be betting wide receiver at pick 20 for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'll say that.
Yeah, I could see a Brian Thomas Jr. type, Xavier Worthy type player heading into Pittsburgh for sure.
So in the startup draft that we're doing right now for the Fantasy Point listeners, my pick is coming up, not this pick, but the next pick. And currently on the board, we have Kenneth Walker, Stephon Diggs, Bryce Young, Isaiah Pacheco, and George Pickens.
Nope.
It feels gross. I have absolutely no idea. I'm thinking I'm going Stephon Diggs there. We'll see. I don't really like it. I could also go and take the 111 my pick.
No.
Who are the other options? Sorry. I heard Pickens, Kenneth obviously, Walker, and I heard Diggs and 111.
Stephon Diggs, Bryce Young, Isaiah Pacheco, George Pickens, and then I'll also throw in DeAndre Swift.
Oh, I mean, to me, there's two really fun options there. I'd be going with Bryce Young or Ken Walker.
Yeah.
Okay. I do have
not.
I would probably take Bryce Young.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I knew you were going to ask that, and right away, it was just not going to be. I wasn't going to let you set me up for George Pickens. Now, there was one comment before we get out of here that I do want to touch on, because I know that the audience was probably expecting me to do victory laps. We actually did talk about this before we hit the go live button and why I am not doing jumping jacks. Anti-Misanthrope said, man, I wanted the show to be all about Sam Darnold being the next MVP. If you're familiar with the program, I used to have a running ticker that ran across the bottom anytime Sam Darnold ended up as a QB1, which happened more times than people want to give Sam Darnold credit for. Now, hear me out. I mentioned that the Ravens have got me so down bad about their practice field that I can't enjoy Derrick Henry. I will not celebrate Sam Darnold and the potential that we could see out of him as a QB1 in that system until he escapes the draft. Mostly because I can't do that to my heart. I know in my heart I want to celebrate Sam Darnold's Baker Mayfield Geno Smithing. Okay, I want to believe that. But I got to wait for the draft because I just can't set myself up for that kind of heartbreak. So as much as you wanted this show to be about that, I really do think Minnesota is taking a quarterback, whether they stay at 11 or they move up. Any thoughts on Justin Jefferson?
I really want to see Sam Darnold get a chance. I legitimately think that last year in Carolina, over the back half of that season, he played the best football of his career. I was really excited to potentially see him have a shot in San Francisco last year. You won't, basically, other than San Francisco, you might not find a better spot than Minnesota with O'Connell, Jefferson, and Addison, and Hawkinson. So I hope he gets to play for a while. I think he actually will do quite well. I really do believe that. We'll see. I think that they will, it's the QB4 sweepstakes, which I think we all think is most likely to be JJ McCarthy. But looking at what's happened through free agency, right? I mean, we should touch on this quarterback situation now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Bears, I know Lucas is probably still holding up some hope, but the Bears, they're in quarterback. The Commanders are taking a quarterback. The Patriots are taking a quarterback. Then we have the Giants, who will have Daniel Jones, and they just went and prioritized Drew Lock. So that tells me they're probably out of the first-round quarterback business. Then the Raiders are interesting. They go out and they spend a pretty insane amount of money, frankly, on Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, to battle him. AOC.
Right. To pair him with Aiden O'Connell. And so the question is, like, I mean, if they draft a quarterback, then they're basically just fully, you know, they're just ditching Aiden O'Connell at that point, which, I mean, fair enough, I guess.
Hey, he led them to like five wins, bro.
Yeah, but I think that they're not a lock to be super interested in the round one quarterback market based on that signing. So to me, it's like 2.5 teams now that are kind of in a potential spot for the J.J. McCarthy, or if it's one of the other guys who slips. So I think the Vikings, you know, it's really, really to me, the question isn't as much where do they have to trade up to. It's they can sit at 11. They're the first of those teams. It's does another team trade up ahead of them, right? And I don't know. That's something we'll have to see. Is Denver doesn't have a lot of draft capital, right? Do any of these teams, the Raiders or the Broncos, do they care enough about one of these guys to go move up ahead of them? We'll find out. I agree. I think the most likely scenario is that J.J. McCarthy goes to the Minnesota Vikings at 11 or maybe with a slight trade up, and Sam Darnold plays very few games in that case. Mm-hmm. But guy can dream, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I just don't look. I've seen the videos. Okay. I've seen on the YouTubes, right? All the titles, Sam Darnold, QB1 opportunities. And I've seen it all over the amateur porn site known as X.com. And I've seen them all. Okay. And I wanted to click on every one of them, but I couldn't do it because I know my heart's just going to get broken. So I can't set myself up for that. I need to leave room for Derrick Henry blowing both of his knees out on the Ravens practice field. But I just wanted to mention one hilarious scenario that I don't think is going to happen. Like you said, the QB landscape has shifted. One, Justin Fields. Every time Schefter comes on, and I get it, Schefter's been interesting as a follow over the last couple of years. All the NFL insiders have been interesting, to say the least. But hearing him say that teams are viewing Justin Fields as nothing more than a backup or a one-year option, oh, Jacob, like you said, the Justin Fields fanboys are just having not their couple of days. Not great. Also not great for Lucas's bank account. However, there is one quarterback scenario that I think would be hilarious and I want to see happen is the Jets take a rookie quarterback to back up Aaron Rodgers for his inevitable retirement.
Well, I've heard rumors that might have interest in Sam Howell too.
Yeah, just any sort of quarterback, right? So if they spend any capital on a quarterback, but I just could you just imagine Aaron Rodgers though, and just how insanely hurt he would be should the Jets take his replacement like the Packers did to him? It just seems so fun. But I wouldn't mind the Sam Howell thing. Granted, I think Sam Howell is absolutely terrible. But back up one place, go back up to another place. I don't know.
I mean, we'll see with Fields. I mean, like I'm first in line at the Fields hater club, but I still think that it's interesting what some of the teams chose to do. You know, I guess we never know what the asking price is, right? Would I rather do what the Raiders are doing now than spend a second for Justin Fields? Yes. Would I rather do what the Raiders are doing now than send a fourth for Justin Fields? No. Yeah, I mean, if someone said any thoughts on Fields, go. I think that's kind of what we're doing. Minnesota, I think, you know, Sam Darnold certainly doesn't preclude them, but to me it communicates that their goal is Darnold plus rookie.
Yeah.
By all accounts, Denver has no interest. I don't think Vegas is, like, totally out of the mix, but I think you're pretty darn close, right? If you're spending $15 million in guaranteed money on Minshew, I think that he's your week one starter. Maybe they add a rookie to that to battle with him, but I don't think Fields is in their plans. So where does that leave? Like, nowhere with the starting job open, right? The Steelers are going to be doing the Russ Pickett thing. The Giants went out and prioritized Drew Lock. I think that they probably would have checked in on Fields before making that move if they had any interest. And so to me, the most likely scenarios now are either that he stays on the Bears as their backup quarterback this year, and they just decide to hold him until someone else's quarterback gets injured and see if they can get a day two pick at that point. Or a team wants to take a shot on a development guy, right? I mean, the team that I root for is, to me, the team that makes the most sense, because they're going to get probably a round four or round five compensatory pick for what the Raiders just spent on Gardner Minshew. They will clearly be in the market for a new backup quarterback. Richardson's coming off a season where he got injured constantly, so I think the Colts should be interested in getting a premium backup quarterback and would be really, really benefited from getting a backup quarterback that is super mobile, so they don't have to change the entire offense if Richardson gets injured again. And also, like, you know, totally reasonable if the Colts are like, we think we love Richardson and he's the guy, but it wouldn't hurt to have another developmental option in the building. So if I were them, I would offer a fourth round pick for Fields and see what happens. I think that the Eagles are the kind of team that might do that too, where they also just lost their backup. And the thing is with these backups, right? Like, you cancel your compensatory pick if you sign someone else.
Yeah.
So for a team like the Colts or the Eagles who just lost their backup, you trade for Justin Fields. Like, I don't know if it'll be a four or five, but say whatever they get for Minshew, say they get a four for Minshew as a compensatory pick. They then go out and trade for Justin Fields. They give up a four. They get a four back as a comp pick. They basically get a free Justin Fields out of that scenario. Maybe it's a five and they move back, you know, around or something like that.
Right.
I think that that's something that's very in play, and the Colts and the Eagles would be two teams that would really be benefited from it.
I can tell you who I think will do it, because they have the cap space to sign him if he does do well, and they also desperately need a quarterback. And that's the New England Patriots. I think the New England Patriots have a legitimate opportunity, or at least there's been enough buzz about them taking Marvin Harrison Jr. that it kind of gives me pause a little bit. It's come from multiple sources, but so maybe they want to trade down. Maybe the New England Patriots are like, we need everything. We're going to trade down. Maybe they trade way down, right? Maybe they're the ones that trade with Vegas, or they're the ones that trade with Minnesota. Whatever they got to do, they go down outside of that top 10, miss out on that. Now they go and spend, like you said, a fourth round pick, bring in Justin Fields as a 1 year option, give him any wide receiver in the first round and build the team. I think the team in the best position to roll the dice with where their team is New England. Because they're one of the few spots that still need a quarterback. He's only, what, costing them $2.5 million this year? And they have just a ton of cap space currently to really go about handling him and signing other players. And, right, if they go, let's say they go and trade for Justin Fields, does it make Calvin Ridley finally answer their lonely text messages back? I loved your pub analogy. I thought that was phenomenal earlier today. But I think the most realistic place for Justin Fields resides in New England, because they need him. And, well, they need anything. They can't go with Bailey Zappi or whatever. And maybe they're not 100% convinced that any of these rookies are it. Take the shot on Justin Fields. It'll be cheap enough. I really do think it is.
I don't think that that's an insane idea, especially because the Pats will probably be so bad no matter how good Fields or the rookie is, that, you know, maybe it doesn't necessarily cost you the chance of still having a high pick in future years. I don't think it's nuts. I think I would still just take the shot on the quarterback, but I just mostly think it's unlikely to happen, because I think if the Pats had, like, as much as we've heard some people speculate that they might not take a quarterback, what we haven't heard about the Pats is any ties between them and any non-bridge quarterback, right? Like, the only quarterback they were heavily rumored to sign was Brissett, and then they went and did that. They were never rumored to really be on Russ. We never heard any rumors about them and Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
We heard some rumors about them in Baker Mayfield. That's true. We haven't really heard them in relation to Fields yet. Like, to me, the fact that we've heard them sort of outside of the rumorville on almost all these other quarterbacks, that indicates to me that they're just pretty comfortable sitting and picking one at three. But we'll see. That would be That would be the spot, right? That would be kind of the last spot where he could be a week one starter.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And of course, there's obviously the Commanders, but I don't think they move out of the number two, right? If somebody walked up to the Commanders and gave them a God offer, right, to move that far out of number two, I mean, there's a spot, but at that point, why wouldn't you just reroll Howell, right? Why would you make the move for Fields when you could just reroll Howell? So I don't really see that. I'm just looking at this from a cap space point mm-hmm. of view, but you're right. I mean, the Seahawks would be another interesting option, but Geno's locked in there now for at least this year, and I'm pretty sure a big dead cap hit the following year, which we've touched on before. So I think you're right. I think that was it. The Falcons, I think, was probably the team the Bears were hoping for the most, but they went and got their guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Breaking news, Bears are drafting Caleb. Sources me, live 10 minutes away from Bears HQ. Hey, there we go. We're going to keep you locked in there, John. 0-2. Look,
top,
hour
top
and a
break for Lucas. Lucas Gilbert, hardest hit.
Dude, should we reintroduce the bet? I mean, we have almost 4,000 people watching currently. I think maybe some people don't know what the bet is. Let's reintroduce the bet on our way out, just so Lucas has another thing to fear moving forward.
I have nothing to fear anymore with Jerry Jeudy going to Cleveland and everything that I ever thought I knew about fantasy being ripped from me.
Right.
But the bet, before we get on to the funeral that is me believing in Jerry Jeudy, was, and Jacob, correct me if I'm wrong here, but if the Bears take a quarterback at the first overall position, Jacob wins the $100 from me. And if the Bears do pretty much literally anything else, I will win the $100. My ideal scenario is pretty much gone. The Falcons are not going to trade up to 101 after spending stupid amount of money on Kirk Cousins. So my dream is dead there. But every day that Justin Fields is still on that roster, I have some amount of hope. I'm not done hoping altogether. Jerry Jeudy killed a lot of my hope, a lot of my spark, but
yeah,
I'm not done hoping altogether.
Yeah. I mean, first off, you're screwed in the bet. I mean, it's dead. It's over. We should specify if it's 100 US or 100 Canadian. I think
yeah, we should probably specify.
Oh, yeah, well, US. US. Is there any currency that's more valuable than US? Euros? Anyone here in Euros?
I might have to be the paragon of objectivity on that one and make that call for these two. But Lucas, did you want to say final words to Jerry Jeudy as we pour one out for the guy that I ate enough shit talking about how absolutely dreadful he was and people came after me continuously and refused to change their mind until you did just now?
The only thing I can say about Jerry Jeudy, if I could talk to Jerry Jeudy, if I had that opportunity, you did not have a bigger believer.
Traumatic music.
Oh, that's coming. That's coming.
You did not have a bigger believer on the internet, in the Broncos fan community, other than me. And well, even after your rookie year, whenever you had, 13 drops, I still believed. In the second year, whenever you were battling injuries, I still believed. In this third year, I don't even remember how many years it's been now, but I've been believing for a long time. I still had some belief. And now, with you going to Cleveland, all I can say is good luck. I wish you the best. And who knows, maybe you can outperform Elijah Moore. It was a time, though. I had lots of memories, very few of them good. But I will cherish them until Denver gets a new quarterback. Thank you. What the heck is playing now? I will tell you all this. I am currently in the final stages of planning a wedding. And
nice.
Picking your music is way more
difficult. Are you
marrying
Jerry?
if only he would have me. The closest thing I have.
No.
No, I can't move it. I have Legos on top of it. The closest thing I have is his mini helmet and his jersey. Right.
And
I might just sit in the shower wearing the jersey and start crying at some point, but that's okay.
Right. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you will have nothing but doubt and regret and sadness knowing that I was right all along, which should probably eat at you, you know, more than it rightfully should. Guys, we're at an hour and a half, right? Shout out to everyone watching. You guys have been phenomenal. I mean, every time we sign on to do this show every week here at Fantasy Points, I am blown away by the reception. And I know the Dynasty product has needed some catching up to the other great products over at fantasypoints.com. We're happy to be tasked to take it home, to take it to the promised land. Of course, we have, yeah, only the Bears can screw up having the number one pick. I don't know, the Browns did a lot. So trust me, that wouldn't be the first time someone blew it. But obviously, some of us here have content that goes out elsewhere. Jacob, you mentioned you already had a write-up. Thinking About Thinking will be in the description, but you want to leave some people that may not know about Thinking About Thinking with a little bit of a preview from today's write-up.
Sure. Yeah, I wrote this morning about, well, at least what I thought were the five biggest signings of day one, so, and all the ramifications from that. So I talked about the Kirk Cousins signing, the Swift signing, the Pollard signing, the Barkley signing, the Jacob signing. Went through the details of the finances in the contract and sort of when I think they're basically assured to be on that team for and to when they might potentially have outs. And then basically took every player that was materially involved and where I foresee them finishing the season, where I would draft them, and where I think they're valued in Dynasty. So if you want to see that, eventually I will have a write-up in a similar vein to every material signing, the free agency period. I'll probably have another one with another handful of signings up, I don't know, within the next few days. And then certainly by this weekend, I'll try and wrap up all the signings that I haven't gotten to yet throughout the week. So make sure to stay tuned over there.
I do expect a glowing review of DeAndre Swift. Like, just absolutely glowing.
I did say, I actually said in my first sentence, I said the Bears signed my favorite running back, and thank the newer subscribers. Like they were like, it's, why did you call him your favorite running back? And then like talk about all the bad metrics he has. And I was like, well, that's the joke. the whole bit with Swift is like, it's not that I think he's like the worst running back in the league. Like I don't, it's that he is talented enough that I'm never going to just be like, I don't care about him. Like, it's not like Devin Singletary. It doesn't bother me because I think he does. He's like maximized everything that guy is capable of. Right. But what Devin Singletary is capable of is basically scoring 13 points per game. He's never really going to be that much of a game changer. Swift has so much physical talent. Like, I love this guy as a prospect. People always forget that. Yeah. But he's just has so, he has so many consistent mental errors that it makes it very frustrating for me to watch him. But then what's also frustrating is that ultimately, my grievances with how he plays the running back position only matter to the extent that coaches care about them.
Yeah.
So it's this constant balancing act of like, if he gets touches, he's going to be really valuable. And sometimes people are like, this guy sucks, he's never available. And I'm like, yeah, he's kind of a value here. But then people get really excited. And then I'm like, yeah, but he actually isn't any better than he used to be. He still makes the same mistakes. So I just, he just becomes eternally discussed. And I end up having this same DeAndre Swift conversation all the time from different angles. I don't know. He lives rent free in my brain, that guy, for sure. Let it the next chapter unfolds.
He is the embodiment of me calling you a flip-flop type analyst. Like, he is the poster child of that, because one day you'd be like, nah, he's a great value for sure. And then it could be two paragraphs later, you'd be like, nah, I'm out, because he jumped four spots in ADP overnight. And you're like, nah, it's too far, bro. Too far. Lucas, you are in tune with the college football content and the Devy content. When is the next Full Tilt Devy show?
The next Full Tilt Devy show is next Wednesday, and I will not be on the show, but Andy and John are bringing on several people from campus to Canton, and they are going to do a college freshman draft. So a mock draft for, and essentially just ranking all of the incoming freshmen about who they are most excited about, what positions to be targeting, what strategies do you employ for trying to maximize the value in drafting them, not only for Devy purposes, but also there will be, of course, some mention of C2C leagues with Campus Canton folks on the show. So they are really, really excited about that. And make sure you are subscribing not only to Full Tilt, but to Fantasy Points as well, to maximize your chances of winning a signed Malachi Nelson USC jersey. If we get enough people to subscribe, there will be another giveaway item released at that point. If it doesn't happen now, it's going to happen sometime in the future. But now's the time to get more and more things out of it. While the pool is still a little bit smaller for you to try to win, keep entering. And yeah, hopefully we can give away lots of items.
I love that. And I will mention the giveaway that we do have planned for Dynasty Points with all the craziness. Hopefully I get to announce some stuff in the next couple of weeks, but things have been absolutely insane for me lately. And hopefully we get a little bit more rhythm and stuff as we go here. But last thing before we get out of here, Chad Drew says giving up on Roschon already seems strange. Well, the Bears looked at Roschon and Killer Herbert and thought giving DeAndre Swift a 3-year contract was worth it. So I think they're telling you how they feel. So yeah, I'm giving up on him for the prospect of him being like an elite fantasy producer. 100%. It's a long shot. Let's be honest. As for us, look, we did talk about, we have it. It's in the building. We have a Michael Vick signed Kelly Green jersey, and we do have a CJ Stroud 9.8 graded rookie card that we will also be trying to find a way to give away here at Fantasy Points. Don't quite know how we're going to do that yet or when it is coming, but it will be one of the many reasons why you want to be subscribed here to Fantasy Points. Reminder, the link to the Full Tilt YouTube channel for all the Devy content that is there will be in the description. Thinking About Thinking will be in the description. We have the market report recording Thursday night. We'll release Friday with myself, Andy, and Tom Lee, formerly of The Walkabout. Absolutely love that. Going to break down more of these values, how players are moving up and down the board. You're not going to want to miss out on that. Obviously, all the other content over at fantasypoints.com, like my article, 3 undervalued players you should be drafting. And so far, all three of them, absolutely surviving free agency. Going to write into that. Going to want to go and check that out for me, for Jacob, for Lucas, and for everyone watching. I want to remind everyone to check in on your loved ones, even if you're not sure that you need it. Remember that clear eyes and full hearts can never lose in your best days. Well, goddamn, they're always spent tilted. Good night, everybody.